Okay. Yat. In which? Nibadah. Bound. Abhimanah. False conception. Ayam. This. Tat. Of that body. Vadat. From the annihilation. Praninam. Of the living beings. Vadaha. Annihilation. Tata. Similarly. Na. Not. Yasya. Of whom? Kaivalyat. Because of being absolute. One without a second. Abhimanaha. False conception. Akila Atmanaha. Of the super soul and all living entities. Parasya. The Supreme Personality of Godhead. Namakartuhu. The Supreme Controller. He. Certainly. Himsa. Harm. Kena. How. Asya. His. Kalpyate. Is performed. So translation. Because of the bodily conception of life, the conditioned soul thinks that when the body is annihilated, the living being is annihilated. That means destroyed. It's a fancy word for destroyed. Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the Supreme Controller, the super soul of all living entities, because he has no material body. He has no false conception of I and mine. It is therefore incorrect to think that he feels pleasure or pain when blasphemed or offered prayers. This is impossible for him. Thus he has no enemy and no friend. When he chastises the demons, it is for their good. And when he accepts the prayers of the devotees, it is for their good. He is affected neither by prayers nor by blasphemy. So purport by his divine grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Because of being covered by material bodies, the conditioned souls, including even greatly learned scholars and falsely educated professors, all think that as soon as the body is finished, everything is finished. This is due to their bodily conception of life. Krishna has no such bodily conception, nor is his body different from his self. Therefore, since Krishna has no material conception of life, how can he be affected by material prayers and accusations? Krishna's body is described herewith as Kaivalya, non-different from himself. Since everyone has a material body conception of life, if Krishna had such a conception, what would be the difference between Krishna and the conditioned soul? Krishna's instructions in Bhagavad Gita are accepted as final because he does not possess a material body. As soon as one has a material body, he has four deficiencies. But since Krishna does not possess a material body, he has no deficiencies. He is always spiritually conscious and blissful. Ishvara Parama Krishnaha Satchidananda Vigraha. His form is eternal blissful knowledge. Satchidananda Vigraha, Ananda, Chinmaya, Ras, and Kaivalya are the same. Krishna can expand himself as Paramatma in the core of everyone's heart. In Bhagavad Gita, in the 13th chapter, text 3, this is confirmed. Kshetrajnam chapi mam viti sarva kshetreshu bharata. The Lord is the Paramatma, the Atma or super soul of all living souls, of all individual souls. Therefore, it must naturally be concluded that he has no defective bodily conceptions. Although situated in everyone's body, he has no bodily conception of life. He is always free from such conceptions and thus he cannot be affected by anything in relation to the material body of the jiva. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita in the 16th chapter, text 19, Tanaham Vishita Puran Samsareshu Naradama Shipram Yajasram Ashubam Asurishveva Yonishu. Those who are envious and mischievous, who are the lowest among men, are cast by me into the ocean of material existence, into various demoniac species of life. Whenever the Lord punishes persons like demons, however, such punishments are meant for the good of the conditioned soul. The conditioned soul, being envious of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, may accuse him, saying, Krishna is bad, Krishna is a thief, and so on. But Krishna, being kind to all living entities, does not consider such accusations. Indeed, he takes account of the conditioned soul's chanting of Krishna, Krishna, so many times. He sometimes punishes such demons for one life by putting them in a lower species. But then, when they have stopped accusing him, they are liberated in the next life because of chanting Krishna's name constantly. Blaspheming the Supreme Lord of his devotee is not at all good for the conditioned soul. But Krishna, being very kind, punishes the conditioned soul in one life for such sinful activities, and then takes him back home, back to Godhead. The vivid example for this is Vritrasura, who was formerly Chitraketu Maharaj, a great devotee. Because he derided, that means chastised or criticized, Lord Shiva, the foremost of all devotees, he had to accept the body of a demon called Vritra, but then he was taken back to Godhead. Thus, when Krishna punishes a demon or a conditioned soul, he stops that soul's habit of blaspheming him, and when the soul becomes completely pure, the Lord takes him back to Godhead. Very nice. So, Yannibhado vimanuhyam tadvada praninam vadaha tatana yasya kaivalyad avimanu kilatmanaha parasya dama karturhi himsa kenasya kalpate. So, Om Gana Timuranda Shah Gananjana Shalakaya Takshura Miritam Yena Tasmai Shigurve Namaha. All right. So first we'll talk about the conditioned soul, because most of us here are conditioned souls. And the conditioned soul means that he has these upadis. Upadi means like designation. That means I think that I am this body, I'm male, I'm a certain age, certain nationality, a certain race, certain country, certain species. I mean, all these different things are upadis, or designations. But the interesting thing is that when we deal with conditioned souls, which is 99.99% of the time, we have to be aware of the upadis. And also, most of the time, we have to be aware of our own upadis. Because if you're not aware of your upadis, even if you're free from upadis, or false designations, you can't function in this world. I'll give you a practical example. Now, of course, the Ishvapanishad says that vidya avidya. One has to cultivate knowledge of the upadis and knowledge of transcendence simultaneously. And I'll give you an example, a practical example of this. Let's say you are applying for a driving license. And they ask you, how old are you? So you have to deal with upadis at that point. You can't say, Najayate Mriyate Vakadachan Nayanbhutva Bhavitana Bhuyaha Ajo Nitya Shashvato Yam Purano Hanyate Hanyamane Shivire. In other words, you can't say, the soul is never born, I'm eternal. So there is no place on the driver's license for saying eternal, is there? In Fiji. or if they ask you your race, you have to tell them your race. It just doesn't... actually, in Sanskrit, there's a word for this. It's called vyavaharika. This is something new for all of you to learn. There's two words, paramarthika and vyavaharika. Has anyone heard of these words before? Vyavaharika means ordinary dealings. You know, if someone says, where were you born? Ordinary dealings, you know, I was born in Suva. And paramarthika, where were you born? I was never born. Where did you come from? The spiritual world. Where did you come from? My mother. You understand the difference between the two? So you have to really function on both levels. I mean, I'll give you a practical example also insofar as our religious designation. Okay. Sometimes we are called Hindus, right? Hindus. It was very interesting if you examine this word Hindu. There's no mention of the word Hindu anywhere in any Vedic literature. It is not there. And it really wasn't even used up until the time the people from outside India came, and they were talking about people on the other side. There's two ways to understand it. One is the Sindhu River, and the other one is Sindhu means ocean too. You understand? Sindhu in Sanskrit means ocean. So they were talking about people on the other side of the ocean or the Sindhu River. And that became Shindu, Shmindu, Hindu, you know, whatever. That became Hindu. It's a geographical designation. And Vaishnavas never used that designation up until the last century or two centuries. When Lord Chaitanya was present, if you look in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the only time you'll find the word Hindu mentioned is when people outside of Vaishnavism are referring to Vaishnavas. You know, it's an external designation. But they won't use it amongst themselves. Hey Prabhu, we're Hindus. Isn't it? Why don't you join the International Society for Hindu Consciousness? Isn't it? Actually, in India, it's very interesting. India, they passed a law defining what a Hindu is, which is really interesting. And they said a Hindu, I mean, I use this sometimes. They said a Hindu is one who accepts the authenticity of the Vedic literatures and also who believes in the different time cycles. You know the time cycles? You understand? Like the yugas, like Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga, Dwarpa Yuga, Kali Yuga, Sahasra, Yuga Pariyantam, you know, the thousand yugas taken together is the duration of Lord Rama's one day. A thousand is the night. And so, you know, therefore you have people outside of Hinduism, like, of course, the Muslims, and also the Buddhists are outside of Hinduism, and other groups, too, are outside of Hinduism. So it's just people who accept the Vedic, because the Buddhists decry the Vedic literatures. So that's how the Indian government had to come up with a definition of Hinduism. It's interesting, because there was no definition. And under the heading of Hinduism, you have all sorts of people. There are people who believe in the fuzzy-haired people as being God. You know, fuzzy hair. Krishna, you know, anyway, we'll mention any names. And there's people who believe in all sorts of different things. All sorts of different things. There's no God. We're all God. Everything is nothing. Nothing is everything. Whatever that means. I don't even know what it means. So you have this, all this, you know, really, really big understanding of what a Hindu is. So getting back to the point, so if people ask us if we're Hindus, sometimes we have to say yes. Because that's vyavaharika, as we mentioned. Remember those two words? Vyavaharika, paramarthika. Vyavaharika means the temporary designations. You know, so we have to function on that level just to be practical in this material world. I mean, just like Sanatana's doing business. And he understands spiritually that nothing belongs to him, but if he thinks like that in business, nothing will belong to him. You understand? If he says, your money is my money, it all belongs to Krishna, then how will he be successful in business? So he has to function on the Vyavaharika platform, although he may be absorbed in the Paramantika platform internally. So the devotee has to balance these two things. Okay, that's one understanding. Another point that I thought was important to make that I learned from Vishwanath yesterday, that not every devotee is transcendental. Because we were talking about, I thought every devotee is transcendental. Actually, when you join the Krishna conscious movement, it's very funny. The first time I joined, when I saw the devotees falling asleep during japa period, I thought they were in samadhi. you look around the room and I said, wow, these are advanced souls. One day I want to become like that too. So many times we have a misconception when dealing with other people. That's one thing. Just thinking people are more advanced than they actually are. Even there was one devotee who smoked marijuana and he used to cry during the kirtans and everyone thought, wow, this is Vyabhachari Baba. He would cry for like half an hour or something like that, and they would even have tapes of him crying. And the devotees would be, wow, my God, please accept my humble obeisances, Guru Maharaj. So, that's like the story that Prabhupada told about the jackal who was in the forest and he spilled some paint on him, and even the lion was starting to worship him. Because if you have a blue jackal, it's pretty unusual. He's effulgent, blue, the color of Krishna. He was Krishna, basically, the jackal incarnation. So, anyway, so as soon as the jackal started to howl, when the other jackals howled, that means cry. If you ever go to Mayapur, you'll hear jackals howl continually at night. And then the other ones understood. The other animals in the forest understood. This is a typical story that's told in India, actually. It's from the Hitopadesh. So then they understood it was just a jackal. And then at that point, they all chanted the prasadam prayers. Sharira vijaja chitendi. At least the lion did. And then the lion had jackal prasad. He offered it to Krishna first. Or the jackal. So sometimes, we just don't see that people are in Maya when they're actually in Maya. We think they're transcendent. Another problem that Vishnu pointed out to me yesterday, I thank him very much, because I was in illusion, was that devotees generally are attached to their tongues. I said, really? Is that possible? I said, aren't they just attached to philosophy and chanting and Krishna's pastimes and reading? Because I made that point in class yesterday. And he said, no, they like to eat. And the tastier the prasadam is, the more enthusiastic the devotees will be. I said, what? How's that possible? Because I'm thinking something different. Of course, when I first joined the movement, eating was probably one of my most important activities. Everything else we did in the temple was basically to fill in the time between prasadam times. When we talked about it last night, I started to describe some of the nice prasadam we used to eat, like things fried in ghee. And when I mentioned that, the devotees were getting nervous because they were thinking, ghee's too expensive, we can't use it here. Isn't it? So here you use oil. Sanatan provides most of the oil in Caltex, is that right? For the cooking. Anyway, not really. I don't want to get anyone nervous about it. So I was remembering when he mentioned that, I remember the old days, how we like the taste of pakoras and this and that. And sweet rice, and I used to, for breakfast, I used to have like a mountain of halava and a lake of sweet rice inside. And my drink was the leftover glubjiman juice from the Sunday feast. Can you imagine? I mean, it's lucky I didn't get triple diabetes. Many devotees do. So I was remembering that, I think, and also, you know, what one of the things that attracted me to the movement, in addition to the philosophy, was just the delicious prasadam cooked in ghee. And Prabhupada said, if you cook in ghee, people will never forget the taste of it. Prabhupada gave the Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he gave the example that if you want to keep a servant, you give him basmati rice cooked in ghee for at least 2 weeks. After that, you can give him any damn thing. So one of the devotees said to me, does that mean we should feed people nicely before they come to the movement, but after that we shouldn't care? I said, no. That's called, in marketing terms, that's called bait and switch. You ever heard of that before? Bait and switch means that you see something advertised on the in the newspaper, something like that, low price, you know, 50% off when you go, and they no longer have that in stock. They say, well, it's out of stock, but you can have this, and it's twice the price. That's called bait and switch. Never heard that expression before? That's a typical mark. Anyone who studied marketing knows this particular expression. So, anyway, so I was thinking about this, that, look at the story, getting back to the story. So Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, the servant will never go away if you feed him basmati rice with ghee on it for 2 weeks, because he'll always remember the taste, because he'll be conditioned. So I was thinking, yes, maybe one of the problems we have here is that we're not having tasty prasadam. You know, I never thought like that before. I thought, well, maybe just everybody should be an intellectual. Because, you know, anyway, that's the way I think. I should be intellectual. And talk about philosophy, use big words like I just used, Vyavaharika, Paramarthika. But most of these things don't excite people. When I hear big words like that, it excites me. Oh, analysis and everything like that. But the devotees are thinking, when is this class going to be over? You know, he's always throwing out these big words. And, you know, it's time for prasadam. And so, anyway, so if we want to attract devotees, we have to be aware that most people are on the anamaya platform. There's different platforms people are at. I mean, anamaya means food. Like a little child, food is very important. Right? And if they don't get food, they cry. So as adults, of course, we don't cry because it would make a bad example. You know, if you were hungry, you're not going to start going, woohoo, in the middle of Bhagavatam class. A child would. You feel like crying, but you don't because you control yourself. Right? I mean, you actually feel the same way the child does because you're on the anamaya platform. But you're going to control yourself. I mean, I just remember there are some people here, were some people here, because we stopped making rotis for breakfast, they just didn't come anymore. Right? I think roti breakfast. I mean, isn't Krishna consciousness more important than rotis? But for many people, rotis are more important than Krishna consciousness. At least prasadam rotis, right? Like I said, if you want to get rid of someone from your house, then you don't feed him. Right? That's the standard. Like if you have an unwanted guest in your house, just don't feed him. He'll be gone in 3 days. You don't have to tell him go away or anything like that. You just don't feed him. I mean, you can fast too for 3 days, but he'll be gone. It's like if you have some disease, if you fast, it goes away because the bug likes to eat too. Right? If you, Prabhupada said, you know, you fast for some disease. So people who are on the anamaya platform are like the bugs in your disease. Not to say devotees are like bugs, but I don't want to insult any devotee. But I think we have to be practical when dealing with conditioned souls. And say, on the anamaya platform. And some people are on the pranamaya platform. Pranamaya means you get joy out of moving a lot. Of course, that's why we have dancing. And also, it's spiritual. It pleases Krishna. I'm not saying... I mean, these things are all can be engaged or dovetailed in Krishna's service. I mean, just like we have one devotee just joined in our temple in the United States. And he's definitely on the Pranamoya platform instead of Anamoya, because he's not that much interested in food. But he's interested in surfing. You know what surfing is? Yeah, people come here to Fiji to surf, right? Surf means you get on this board and you get on a wave. Prabhupada called them sufferers. You know, Prabhupada pronounced the word a little bit differently. Because you get on the board and you wait for the wave. And sometimes it's so cold in the water they have to wear these suits. Not here in Fiji, of course. They're called wetsuits. And they wait in the wave, and they ride the wave, like that. And they get great joy out of doing that. Or just like Sanatan was asking me, do you want to go on a zip line? You know, we mentioned that last night. A zip line is where you hang in the air, boom, you go through the trees. And there's one place on the way to Navwa, right, where they have a zip line. Through the trees, you go from one tree to another. Isn't that true? Like a monkey. Because the monkeys don't have zip lines, but they hang on the branches and they swing. Have you ever seen that movie Tarzan? You know, they swing. They swing from one branch to another, and they, you know, they go. So that's their zip line. So people like that because they get a rush from doing that. And also here in Fiji you have other activities like hang gliding. I mean, where someone pulls you from behind, from a boat. You've seen this? Once I went to one of the islands here, and there was a boat, speedboat, and it was pulling someone with like a parachute, and they were going in the air. And also skydiving you have here in Fiji. There's a place called Skydiving Fiji. So anyway, so this one devotee, he just became a devotee, and I just preaching to him, see what he needs, and he said, well, you have to understand, during the summer, I'm not going to be in the temple, really. I'm going to be surfing. And then, of course, previously, this is also very funny, I was a temple president in Hawaii. And, not temple president, GBC, sorry. Temple president for 2 weeks, because the temple president blooped. There, so I had to take on the responsibility. So I would sit down to give Bhagavatam class, and nobody would be there. I mean, it's worse than here. So nobody would be there, and I'd say, where'd everybody go? And they say, surf's up. That meant the early morning, Brahma Muhurt is the best time for surfing and chanting. Because that's, you know, the waves are best. They're smoothest. Later on in the day, they get a little choppy. So in the morning, they're really smooth and you can ride and enjoy life like that. So that's called the Pranamoya platform. So some people are on that platform. So we have to attract them with Pranamoya stuff. So we talked about Anamoya, Pranamoya. Some people are on the Manamoya platform. Manamoya means the mind. They like to think about different things, talk about the news. What happened with the Malaysian Airlines plane that disappeared? We don't know, you know. So that's the Manamoya. And there's the Gyanamoya platform, where one understands Krishna consciousness. I mean, it's not completely the pure platform at that point. But still, you know, one is interested in knowledge. Like Krishna says, four types of people approach me. Those who are looking for wealth, those who want knowledge, those who are inquisitive, or those in distress. So that's those looking for knowledge, that's a Gyanamoya platform. And then there's the Vijnanamoya platform, where you practice Krishna consciousness and you have realization, oh, Krishna's God, I'm his servant, material world is temporary. You really get a lot of joy out of realizations, you know, spiritual realizations. I'm not the body. That bird is part and parcel of Krishna. It's just, there's joy in that. That's called the Vijnanamoya platform. And then finally, there's the Anandamaya platform. Not Anamaya, Anandamaya. Anandamaya platform is the platform of bliss. You're just in bliss. So then all the other things are not as important. Like the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. Isn't it? Nidrahara, Vihara. They gave up eating and sleeping. Like every 2 days or whatever, they took a pat of butter. There was so much ecstasy chanting Hare Krishna. They didn't notice their body was tired. It was time to go to sleep. Have any of you experienced that? No. Maybe you have. I don't want to offend any great pure devotees here. But that's the Anandamaya platform. It's just like, it's Kevalanandakana. It's only bliss. So they're just like, wow, ecstasy, ecstasy. Did you sleep? No, I forgot. Have any of you ever forgotten to sleep? Have any of you ever forgotten to eat? I don't think so.
Never.
We don't worry about them. But have any of you ever forgotten to chant your rounds? Maybe.
Yes.
Chant your Gayatris? Maybe. Wake up for Mangalarti? Maybe. So, but we don't forget to eat. We don't forget to sleep. And anyway, so therefore, when preaching Krishna consciousness, we have to be aware to attract people. Like Prabhupada says, kitchen religion. You understand? Prabhupada said that. And I thank Krishna very much. Thank you. Offer my respects for bringing me out of illusion and thinking that everybody was on the transcendental platform in Krishna consciousness. Because that's called Atmavatmanyate Jagat. You see the whole world like yourself. I'm thinking, wow. All I have to do is tell people Krishna will be pleased if you do this and they'll do it. But it doesn't work like that. So some people I just have to put the carrot in front of them. Okay, serve Krishna and you get the carrot. You know, like the rabbit. So that's practical. Anyway, so that's one point. It's actually a very important point for us to understand. But the main point Prabhupada is making here is about Krishna. How Krishna doesn't have a material body. He's certainly not on the Anamaya, Manamaya, Pranamaya. I mean, for example, Prabhupada mentions here, Krishna is not impressed with praise and he's not disturbed by blasphemy, because that would mean the Manamaya platform, right? That, you know, I need people to pray. I need appreciation. Nobody loves me. Do you ever hear people say that? Sometimes the wife says to the husband, you don't love me. And the husband has to act on the Vyavaharika platform saying, yes, I do. Even if he loves Krishna. So anyway, that's why we have to shift. Sometimes you can't say, like the wife says, am I beautiful? And the husband can't say, your body is made of bile, mucus, and air. How can that be beautiful? So he has to go. He can't be on the Paramatika platform. You have to go immediately and, you know, shift your gears like in a car. Okay, got to be in Maya now. shift the first gear. Yes, you are beautiful. And then when he goes to the temple, he has to shift in high gear, you know, the Paramatta platform, and say, we're not the body. But at home, he is his body. In the temple, he's not his body. This is practical Krishna consciousness. Anyway, so Krishna is not on the Manamaya platform. So even if you insult him, he still loves you. If I insult you, you're not going to love me unless you're transcendental. If I say, Zumuk, you are rascal, demon, idiot, ugly, I don't like your haircut. Then after a while, I'll say, I think I need another guru. I have to go shopping for another guru. So there's hate. But Krishna doesn't, you know, Krishna's independent. He has everything he wants. He has all these lakshmis cooking for him. He knows he's all attractive. You know, he just needs to look in the river and see a reflection of himself. And so what is, you know, it doesn't matter to him whether you say you're beautiful or you're ugly. So he doesn't get disturbed. That's the Manomaya platform. And Gyanamaya, he understands everything already. He doesn't have a need to attain more Gyan. And he's always absorbed in the Anandamaya. So when you're in the Anandamaya platform, whether you're Krishna or a pure devotee, then Tamsa Tikshasha Bharatam. Nothing disturbs you. And, as Krishna says, as Prabhupada says here, then Krishna is always concerned with the welfare. In the same way, the pure devotee on the Anandamaya platform is always concerned with the living entity's welfare. And that's described about the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, Dhira, Dhira, Janapriya, Priyakaro. That both the Dhira and Adhira people, that means the self-controlled people, and basically those who have Adandagopir, Vishatam Tamishra, those who have uncontrolled senses, are objects of compassion for the pure devotee of the Lord. Whether someone hates them, just like Haridas Thakur being beaten in the marketplaces by the Muslims, he had as an object of compassion the people who were beating him. There was no question of friends or enemies, as we mentioned previously. So with the Lord, same thing. And Prabhupada mentions that the Lord is so compassionate that he chastises the demon for the demon's own benefit, not for the sake of his emotional satisfaction. When we chastise someone, it's to give us satisfaction, you know, Manomaya platform again. Oh, I'm glad I taught him a lesson. Ha ha. You suffer. Suffer, Suluk. I taught you a lesson. Haribo. But when Krishna chastises for the benefit, and then right after that, the person gets liberated. Like the example of the monkeys in Vrindavan. The monkeys were previously sannyasis. That's why when I go around Vrindavan, I say to all the monkeys, Maharaj. I don't say monkey, I say Maharaj. Nice to see you again. So, maybe some of them were my godbrothers before, I don't know. So, Prabhupada said that anyone who goes to Vrindavan, like someone in the renounced order of life, and breaks the principles, he becomes a monkey or a pig. So pigs and the monkeys are both previously sannyasis. And Prabhupada said that's why the number is increasing of the pigs and monkeys. Because in Kali Yuga, you know, people just like have a hard time controlling their senses. Manda sumanda matiyo, manda bhagya upadrata. So therefore, but Prabhupada said in the next life, after becoming monkeys or pigs, they go back to Godhead. That's not such a bad deal, is it? What do you think? Should we go to Vrindavan and start breaking the principles so we can go back to Godhead next life? No. We don't want to have a life as a monkey or a pig. It's not an enjoyable life. And then when Prabhupada said that, it was an interesting story. The devotees wrote that in one of the Back to Godhead magazines. And then some of the people, the sages or whatever, in Vrindavan and Mayapur read it and they got very angry. You know, why is Prabhupada saying that? Because they were doing the same things that Prabhupada commented on. As a result, you know, people became monkeys. So anyway, so Krishna's he always loves you, is always concerned with your welfare, and he doesn't get anything else for himself out of it other than the loving exchange that he has with you. Isn't that nice? To have a God who's not a monster. I mean, the depiction of the gods in some other religions is like he's a monster. He sends you to, just because you offended him and didn't listen to him in one lifetime, you're sent into the fire and brimstone pit forever. That's a monster. That's not God. Someone who just hates you forever? Is that God? It's not the God I want to worship. I want to worship the God who forgives me after some time. Okay. So I think we have to end now. God is coming. All right. Thank you very much. All glories to His divine grace. Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai. What do you think?